And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation, the most beautiful state, this one, Alabama. I'm talking about, this show goes like way on down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, all the way back over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia and Tennessee and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. Hey, listen, before I jump into the second dipper of the day, let me just tell you guys, if you listen during the break and you hear the advertising, you may just kind of let it blow right on by. It's advertising. You think, no, it's important. Those are our sponsors. Right Side Radio is a separate business. We are not owned by the radio stations, and part of the way we sustain what we do is by selling ads. If you listen to this show and you're thinking, man, those guys got it going on. I want my business to be aligned with the way they think and act and say things, we'd love to have you on the team. And the way you do that is not to call the station. You call us. Call us direct. You go to our website, rightsideradio.org. That's rightsideradio.org. Click on a tab that says advertising and contact. And then all you got to do is send us a message and we will get right back with you. We would love to have you as an advertising sponsor of Right Side Radio. That's how we stay awake. May I say we stay afloat, man. All right, so listen, let me just say rightsideradio.org. That's where you find out all about it. Dipper number two. Dipper number two is kind of personal. Dipper number two, Afghanistan, 2 years later. For those who don't recall, yesterday marked exactly 2 years since the Taliban rolled into Kabul and established their second reign of control in Afghanistan. After 20 years on the ground, the United States, under the Biden administration, completely abdicated any and all authority on the world stage by the way they mishandled the pullout from Afghanistan. Now, understand me when I say this. I've got family members on active duty right now. I don't want to see them have to go to the same places that I went at the beginning of the war. I was there at the very beginning. And it's a heck of a thing to think we were at war for 20 years. So when I talk about the war in Afghanistan, I am not trying to perpetuate it or keep it going. I will tell you this, my personal opinion is we never should have abdicated on or blown off the idea of keeping Bagram. If you look at it, Germany, Japan, Korea, are we still there? Yeah, we have bases there. It's called forward presence. And there is nothing wrong with having forward presence, which, by the way, we didn't take it. We pay rent for it. We pay a lot. We put a ton into the economies of those countries. It's not like Bagram would have been a place that we would have just kept for free. I guarantee you, there would have been jobs, there would have been rent, there would have been utilities, there would have been a lot of things that we would have probably paid handsomely to maintain that level of forward presence. But Bagram couldn't, I mean, Biden couldn't think that way. Had to get out. Just had to pull out. Rip that Band-Aid off. Just like he did, by the way, when he was vice president, and he and Obama did the same thing in Iraq. And what happened in Iraq? It created a power vacuum, and ISIS is the one that filled it. What happened in Afghanistan? It created a power vacuum, and the Taliban has now filled it. So we are now 2 years removed from the day that the Taliban took over, and no one from this administration has taken any ownership, none whatsoever. Who are the Taliban? Now, they're fundamentalists. What does that mean? They're violent extremist fundamentalists. They are violent extremist fundamentalists who sponsor terrorism. They are violent extremist fundamentalists who sponsor terrorism on their own people as well as abroad. When I was there, I lived among the Afghan people for close to a year. I didn't live on a base. My team was out in the middle of an Afghan town called Kunduz. And we lived in an Afghan house, eating Afghan food, wearing Afghan clothes, and with Afghans living with us. I saw the culture firsthand, but I also got to, because of that, hear the stories from the people who would talk about the atrocities that they experienced, who would talk about the people who were executed in the soccer stadiums, who would talk about the fact that children were not allowed to fly kites because that was somehow seen as being against the Taliban view of Islam, about children who were abused, about women who were not allowed to do anything outside the house, and if they stepped outside the house, they had to be wearing a burqa. What's a burqa? It's like basically something that covers you from head to toe, and all you have is a little mesh you can look out of to see where you're going. Girls were not allowed to go to school. Girls were not allowed to work. Girls were not allowed to exist outside the confines of the walls around their own homes. People were flogged in the streets. I'll never forget a friend of mine, an Afghan guy, who told me he can remember being in the bazaar and having the Taliban religious police, they called them, who would come through with switches, and if you weren't praying at the right time, they'd be walking around the bazaar beating people with their sticks and switches. Life under the Taliban, not a lot of fun. And those Neanderthals used to tear everything up. I'll never forget going into places like, you'd go into a school, like Bibi Khadija Tol Kobra School in Kunduz, a girl's school. Well, girls can't go to school, so what do you do with a big school building? Well, you turn it into a barracks for Taliban thugs. And what do? Well, they don't know how to go out and do things like, I don't know, heat their homes like everybody else does, so they rip the window panes out and burn those for fuel. It just defied logic. A lot of what we had to do over there was to basically move a people out of a oppressed mindset. And it was tough. And I said before, it was going to take a generation. But I really believe that progress had been made, regardless of what anybody thinks they had or not. Progress had been made. But when progress is still being made and a government looks to you for support and you walk out on them in the dark of night, which is what Biden did. On July 2nd, Biden, after having said that they'd be leaving on September 11th, which, by the way, who does that? Who tells the enemy what day you're going to move? Biden decided, though, on July 2nd, to surprise everybody, in the dark of night, he ordered that U.S. troops vacate Bagram without giving a single word to the local Afghan National Army commander who also helped maintain Bagram. He said he heard the planes and didn't know what was happening, and all U.S. troops were gone at daylight. Right now, we're looking at the fact that China is moving into Afghanistan. We are looking at the infrastructure that we helped build for 20 years becoming, you know, further and further in decline because the Taliban don't know how to maintain a thing. And girls are once again disallowed from going to school. But at some point in the pullout, we also had the tragedy of 13 lives being taken. 13. 13 service members who stood at the Abbey Gate as thousands of Afghans panicked because they knew what life was like under the Taliban and they were scared to death that it was going to be the same as what it was before. And it is. And just recently, story here from Fox News. Last week, the families of 13 U.S. service members who were killed outside of Kabul's airport during the military withdrawal from Afghanistan came before Congress together for the first time to seek answers about their loved one's death. 2 years after the tragic day occurred. Representative Daryl Issa of California held a congressional forum with Gold Star families. If you're not familiar with Gold Star families, that's the name given to the families of who have lost a loved one in service. And those Gold Star families for nearly 90 minutes provided emotional testimony about the grieving that they experienced while also feeling like they had been misled and betrayed by their own government. One lady talked about the fact that she had just lost her son, and that when President Biden finally came to see the families, he didn't know what to say to her, so he started talking about his own son coming home in a flag-draped coffin from Iraq. No, he didn't. He was home. He died of cancer. He never came home in a flag-draped coffin. Several family members, according to the article, criticized the Biden administration. Some even accused officials of lying about the circumstances of their death. But after their testimony, I will say this, the Department of Defense issued a statement expressing their deepest condolences to the Gold Star families. But the problem we have, though, is that there's never been any accountability. How do you have that level of a debacle militarily and, for that matter, diplomatically in the State Department? How do you abandon 1,000 Americans and $1 billion worth of military equipment and just walk away and then claim it's a success because we did the biggest airlift in the world history? Well, you did that because you did it all wrong. There wouldn't have had to be an airlift if you'd done this correctly. And oh, by the way, what if you had staged it all out of Bagram? What if you had given warning for people to come into Bagram, present their IDs, and then be scheduled at a certain time to go out? No, you didn't do that. You tried to use a civilian airport that was not defensible. And you allowed the Taliban, to help provide so-called security for you outside the gate. and 13 service members died. One of the ladies who provided testimony to Congress, I won't read all of them because I've got comments from each of them, but a Gold Star mother, her son was Corporal Hunter Lopez. She said, "Our system is quick to identify those at fault in faraway countries, but yet somehow we are challenged to evaluate ourselves." She said, "I have no illusion that anyone will be prosecuted or terminated for ignoring intelligence or making bad decisions, not even for lying to the Gold Star families." Listen, that's 2 years ago yesterday that the Taliban took over again. And we're finding out now from people like Representative Michael McCaul, Republican from Texas. Story here on News Nation Now. Representative McCaul is saying that 2 years after the Taliban rolled into Kabul, that new information now coming to light about things like an airstrike that was requested just before the Kabul airport suicide bombing. The ISIS targets were identified, but the airstrike was denied. McCaul's office says it fits a pattern of missed opportunities for the U.S. to try and take action against ISIS during the chaotic transition. And he goes on to say, for 2 years, President Biden has refused to take responsibility for the disaster that he caused or even acknowledge it as a failure. He said, "We need transparency on why it went so poorly. We need the administration's leaders who ignored the advice of commanders and the intel community reportings and warnings, yet not a single person has been held accountable." And he's right. Think about it. What military leader have you seen lose their job? Not a one. What person at the Department of State that just abandoned U.S. citizens has been called on the carpet? Not one. So the chairman of the Joint Chiefs didn't change. The combatant commanders didn't change. The administration certainly didn't change. State Department didn't change. Everybody stayed in place because it was the greatest airlift in the history of the world. Afghanistan, 2 years later. We'll talk about a few more pieces of this when we get back from the break. But yeah, I'm looking right now at several things that are on the slate here, like the timeline we've gone through and what the Biden administration actually bragged about. And oh, by the way, why does China want to be in Afghanistan? I'll tell you. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. I mean, making common sense a superpower. Hey, listen, I got to tell you guys, Southern Immediate Care. Southern Immediate Care, one of our sponsors on the show. Southern Immediate Care is a chain of clinics across North Alabama with locations in Gadsden, Anniston, Tala, five locations around the Birmingham area. Two newest ones are in Chelsea and Hoover. Southern Immediate Care is open 7 days a week. And folks, I'm going to tell you right now, this is who I use, personally. This is who I use, the one in the Gadsden area. And I know the guy that owns the chain. I mean, I feel very comfortable recommending them to you. Southern Immediate Care opens 7 days a week. They see all ages. I'm talking like pediatric to geriatric. They see all of them. And, I mean, you wake up on a Saturday morning, somebody's got a fever, what do you do? Well, Southern Immediate Care is open, so you can go there. Listen, that's the way it works. And Southern Immediate Care is always clean, they're very professional. I love working with their staff. So let me just recommend them to you. And if you need medical attention, they take walk-ins. Just look them up on the online. Find the location nearest to you, Southern Immediate Care. They are all over our North Alabama listening area, and they will take care of you. And by the way, when you go and you're filling out your forms, tell them you heard about this on Right Side Radio. I would appreciate that very much. Southern Immediate Care. All right, hey, listen, I'm back on number two of the Triple Dipper. Coming up top of the hour, we will switch over to the Grand Council with our brethren Jeff Poor and Dale Jackson. But I'm talking about the fact that this is 2 years now. Yesterday marks 2 years since the Taliban took over Afghanistan again. The Biden administration still brags about how they did, by the way. Story on townhall.com. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken yesterday marked the second anniversary of the Taliban taking over Kabul, saying it was a hard decision, and they were able to evacuate virtually everyone. What a stupid thing to say. That's like saying, well, we almost succeeded. Look, we almost won. But he went on to say that the 900 people or so that got left behind, they were able to get virtually all of them out eventually. That's your Secretary of State, by the way. What kind of timeline are we looking at, though? The Taliban, the thugs I talked about a while ago, the Taliban have now taken over. August 15th, 2021, the Taliban marched into Kabul. Timeline here from AP News. Here's just a few highlights here and there of what life has been like now in the mere 2 years, 24 months. In March of 2022, on the day that schools were opening, the Taliban suddenly reversed a promise they had made to allow girls above the sixth grade to attend schools. Girls who showed up were told to go home. Just in May of 2022, the Ministry of Virtue and Vice for the Taliban issued orders that women had to once again wear burqas, all-encompassing robes that cover their faces all except for their eyes, and advise them to stay home unless they have important work to do outside the house. Well, the work went away too, by the way. November of 2022, the Taliban began public lashings again. 19 people received public lashings in the first public floggings in the new Taliban era. December of 2022, they began doing public executions again in front of hundreds of spectators. And by the way, what used to happen was you were required to be there to watch the beheadings. You were required to be there. They would find out if you didn't come. December of 2022, also, the Taliban barred females from attending universities. They were already banned at that point from middle school and high schools. December of 2022 again, the Taliban also barred Afghan women from working with any international or national non-governmental organization groups after already excluding them from most other jobs. In other words, NGOs who didn't abide by the Taliban rules, the Taliban has issued a law and said, well, women can't work for you anyway. July of this year, just last month, the Taliban shut down beauty salons. Beauty salons. Why? Well, that's one of the only places where women could actually be entrepreneurs and have a job. And it was also one of the few places outside the home that women could actually meet. 60,000 female entrepreneurs around the country lost their work because the Taliban ordered them shut down because it was un-Islamic, according to their standards. And then in July of also this year, the Taliban began using stun guns on women who were protesting the ban on beauty salons and spraying them with water hoses and firing into the air to break up the crowds. I'm telling you, that's what Biden allowed to happen. A new report has come out, though. Townhall.com has it, and I'll probably end with, well, I tell you, how do I end with this? I mean, right now I've got the fact that one report on Town Hall is being said that through Freedom of Information Act, it's been determined that there were two opportunities to stop the Kabul airport suicide bombing that Biden's administration denied opportunities to intervene on. And then lastly, I'll say this. 2 years later, we're finding out that massive deposits of lithium are being determined to have been found in the ground in Afghanistan. And suddenly, the Taliban has an opportunity to do exploitive mining, but they need help. And so who's looking at joining them? China. Story in the Washington Post. Afghanistan remains under intense international pressure, isolated politically, saddled with U.S. sanctions because of human rights. But the tremendous promise of lithium could frustrate Western efforts. So Chinese companies are now aggressively positioning themselves to reap a windfall from lithium. Pray tell, why do they need lithium? Oh yeah, for the batteries, for electric vehicles that Biden says we have to drive. Do you see what's happening here? The whole thing is just one big goat rodeo, and Afghanistan never should have happened like it did. We should still be sitting in Bagram. All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. That's two dippers down. We're going to the Grand Council with Jeff Poore and Dale Jackson. You guys stay tuned. We will be right back.